You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
How does a little 13-year-old girl vanish? And nobody seems to know where she is, where she was. Nothing. How can that be? I know where my two 13-year-olds are right now. I guarantee you I know where they are. So how come nobody knows where little Delia is? She just dropped off the map in Gainesville, Florida. See, I don't believe that.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
A Gainesville girl is being reported as missing. According to the Alachua County Sheriff's Office, 13-year-old Delilah Young was last seen in the area of Northwest 142nd Avenue in Gainesville Saturday morning. Deputies say she does not have a cell phone and she was wearing blue pajamas with white stars.
So we know what pajamas she had on, but we don't know where she is. That doesn't make sense to me. With me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know so far. First of all, joining me out of Pennsylvania, high-profile lawyer Matthew Mangino, former elected district attorney, multiple terms, now defense attorney, author of The Executioner's Toll. Catch this: The Crimes, Arrests, Trials, Appeals, Last Meals, and Final Words of 46 people in the U.S. You can find him at mattmangino.com. Renowned psychologist joining us out of the Birmingham jurisdiction, Professor UAB, has his own blog, Psychology Today. Dr. Alan Blotkey, clinical psychologist, deputy chief medical examiner, joining me out of Travis County, Austin, Dr. Kendall Crowns. Now listen to this: Professor, University of Texas, adjunct, University of Texas, and at Texas A&M Medical School. It goes on and on and on with Dr. Kendall Crowns. Investigator Dan Scott, former L.A. County Sheriff's Sergeant, 33 years on the force, 26 years with SVU. But first, let me go out to two special guests. Daphne Young joining me, the National Chief Communication Officer at childhelp.org. She's currently working on legislation to extend the statute of limitations to help children and sex victims have longer to prosecute their cases. And she's working on going after enablers and bystanders that stand by and let child abuse, child molestation just happen. And so many times we're stuck saying, well, it's not a crime. Well, maybe it should be. That's what Daphne Young is working on. To you, Dylan Lyon, anchor and reporter, WCJB TV 20. Dylan can be found at Dylan C. Lyons and on Twitter, Dylan Lyons News. That's a mouthful, Dylan Lyons, and I'd love to keep talking about you and your illustrious career, but let's talk about this little girl. Where was she last seen alive?
That question remains unknown at this point. What we do know
Wait, Dylan, hold on. Let everybody allow that to sink in. Nobody can tell me the last time this child was even seen alive. What about mommy, daddy, grandma, auntie, sister, teacher? Nobody can tell me the last time she's seen alive. I know the last time I saw my children. Let's see here. It was about an hour ago when I dropped them at Vacation Bible School, where they are counselors. So how can nobody know when she was last seen alive?
Family members say it was Saturday. Police report says it was a Sunday. There's no coherency in terms of the last day she was found or when she was reported missing. It was May 15th, May 14th, May 16th. We don't We don't know for sure at what point she actually went missing.
Well, okay, Matthew Mangina, I'm sure you're going to disagree with me as the veteran defense attorney that you are, but I would get every one of those guardians, the mommy, the daddy, the auntie, the grandma, every one of them need to be brought right down to the police station in handcuffs if necessary on child neglect. If you don't know where your child is, you are committing a crime. It's called child neglect. Bam! There. What about that, Mangino?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to take them in handcuffs to the police station, but that's the first place I'm going to go. You know, your 13-year-old last seen in her pajamas all of a sudden disappears without a trace. I'm going directly to the home. I want to know what the circumstances were. I want to know when she was last seen by the people in her home, her guardian, her aunt, whoever is there. What she was planning, what she was doing, what she was talking about. I want to know the whole story, and I want to know it immediately because time is of the essence. If we have a 13-year-old that disappeared, we're working against the clock, and we need to get something done immediately.
I like a tiny bit of what you just said with the immediacy, but I find it very hard to believe police didn't go straight to the home and can't get a straight answer. But part of what you said, I believe, is dead on. To Daphne Young, here's the part that I don't like about what he just said. Why are parents, mommy, daddy, aunt, grandma, whoever's in that home, why aren't they in handcuffs? Why is it that when a child is the victim, somehow it's not as bad of a crime? And I saw this, Daphne Young joining me, the chief communication officer for the nation, for childhelp.org. I strongly advise you to go to their website, childhelp.org. I saw it over and over, Daphne. You and I have discussed this. As a felony prosecutor for 10 years, a Fed for 3 years before that, I saw it over and over and over. When the homicide victim is a baby, oh, mommy must have had, postpartum depression. Or daddy got mad because baby was crying and wouldn't stop. So, that none of that justifies a murder. And very often, I would see those offenders get the kid glove treatment that Matthew Mangino, joining me out of Pennsylvania, is talking about. Why are they better than the other criminals? The child is gone because of them. Because they're not doing their job. What's wrong with a pair of handcuffs and getting all down to the police station?
Well, Nancy, if you look at the police report, everything could be explained away by her guardian. William says the child was last seen playing on the floor with her computer with the screen up and the lights going. And, you know, there's no problem. And by the way, Nancy, did you realize she ran away a lot? You know, this was obviously a problem child. So what you have immediately in that statement are two very self-serving comments. This is a runaway child, perhaps a problem child, and she was last seen doing something innocuous that any of our children might be doing, looking at a computer or doing something or reading a book before bed, as if to indicate when I, you know, closed the door at night, all was well, until you start to backtrack and look at the story.
Well, I don't believe that she's a problem child.
Absolutely not.
I think she's a child with problems, and I think I know where the problems originate. Let me just say that the fish stinks at the head.
Absolutely.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
You get different answers from different people depending on who you talk to as to where she is. But I've never accused you, Daphne Young, of evading my question. But my question is, why are guardians, parents, grandmas, so forth, that inflict either harm or neglect the child, why are they treated differently?
I don't know, because the child has the absolute least power in the world to receive any form of advocacy. And, you know, everyone is so careful, tiptoeing. Now, if a parent is an innocent parent and there's no history, no records of problems, and they may be the victim of a criminal or crime, I understand gentle treatment. But when we so often see these parents with histories of CPS reports, with histories of calls to the police, with all kinds of problems, and it's still this very cautious, gentle treatment, the child certainly doesn't get that treatment after hours or when those authorities leave. And it is terrifying to those of us who then do the intake on those children and see the aftermath of welts and bruises and battering that occurs because, you know, there was soft treatment and everybody stepped away, or they took a cursory glance of a home and said, not too bad, despite trash and paraphernalia out. It is shocking. And I think it's because, to be honest, children are powerless. They can't fight back. And so these adult abusers who harm these children do fight back, and they do become problems, and they do lie. And I sometimes don't know whether it's people don't want to believe it because it's so horrific, or whether they believe it and understand it. And, you know, talking about apathy and bystanders, and they just don't know how to take that next step or don't care to. And children are dying, 5 a day.
Well, I think everybody knows how to dial 911. I think everybody knows that. My children knew it at age 2. You were earlier hearing Paige Beck, WCJB TV 20. Now take a listen to our friends at WKMG TV 6.
Investigators are looking for a 13-year-old girl who disappeared from an Alachua County neighborhood a week ago. 13-year-old Delia Young hasn't been seen since last Friday. At the time, she was wearing blue pajamas and carrying a pink purse just north of Gainesville. Young is 4'2" and weighs about 75 pounds. Anyone who sees her is urged to call 911.
Right there, that's inconsistent. Listen carefully what our friend Bridget Ellison is saying. And this is according to an official law enforcement report. Last seen, Dan Scott, you're the former L.A. County Sheriff's Sergeant. Last seen in pajamas and carrying a pink purse. No. You're not sitting in your room with the laptop open, cross-legged on the floor of the bed, and suddenly you're walking around outside with a pink purse. No, that's inconsistent. So where was she last seen? And why don't the parents know?
Exactly. That is not a runaway when you're wearing pink pajamas.
Oh, good point.
But back to your other question. I've been asking that for years. Why aren't child abuse cases treated like every other crime? And I think it was hit on by some of your other guests, that we don't want to believe that someone could do this stuff to a child. And we've got this mental block that we as a society have to get over, because child abuse is a crime, and the parents and the whoever's committing these crimes need to be treated like any other criminal. Whether you beat somebody up in a bar, this is much worse to be beating a child that has no defenses, especially, you know, when they're extremely young.
Nancy, if I could interject just for a second, though. And
go ahead, Matt.
Certainly, you know, I appreciate that children are vulnerable, but I think we need to put the brakes on just for a second. We have a missing persons report, and we're going to, you know, the police are going to want to investigate this. They're going to want to talk to the people in the home. But I don't think that you get as good of information as if you go there in every missing persons case, you handcuff the people and bring them down to the police station to talk to them. Yeah.
I didn't say every case. I said where the parents have no idea where the child was, is, last time seen. Were they at the mall? Were they out in the yard? Were they in their room on the computer? They have no idea because they were neglectful.
Right. But they do have an idea, whether it's made up, but whether it's a story, at initially the police have to investigate that. She's last seen in her pajamas on a computer. The report says she has a pink purse and she's walking through the neighborhood. Well, you know, let's investigate. Let's continue to investigate, and let's do it as quickly as possible.
Okay, you know what? I'm gonna go along with you, Matthew. I'm gonna go along with defense attorney Matthew Mangino for a few moments. Okay, let's just go down that road. I want to ask Dr. Alan Blotke joining me, clinical psychologist joining me out of Birmingham. I find it very interesting when the child is missing, the first thing out of the family's mouth is, she's a problem child. I don't like that. That rubs me the wrong way.
I mean, the whole thing smells from the beginning of a cover-up. I mean, there's nothing about what they're telling you that, telling us, that makes sense. There's not a 13-year-old girl in pajamas walking around with a pink purse. The odds of that are so low.
Yeah, like Dan Scott just said, she's not going to run away in her pajamas. I don't. And the first thing they say is she's a problem. Why is it the first thing? Oh, my stars in heaven, please help me. I got to find her. Where is she? And helping. And you know, another thing, this strikes me. Dr. Kendall Crowns, she's 13, but she's 4'2", and she weighs 75 pounds. Is that normal?
Yeah, she seems really kind of small for her age and underweight. So to me, it kind of goes along with the overall neglect picture that she's probably not getting fed appropriately and treated right. And also to go along with you as well, running off like that, I've seen murdered children for years, and they always have a good story to cover up for what they did.
Daphne, is that you?
I was going to say, yeah, at Child Help, we call a little child like that failure to thrive. That is a classic symptom of neglect. And when I looked at pictures of her beautiful braids, and she's posing, and she looks like she's in a better state.
So
later,
cute.
I see her hair shorn. It almost looks like it's falling out. That's another symptom. She just appears really bony and malnourished. And, you know, when you hear a story from the parents, yes, we're going to give parents of a missing child the benefit of the doubt, and caregivers, until we start to maybe run their last name and realize that maybe there's 4 years of CPS reports from teachers, et cetera, like part two is within minutes, you can find out that this is not a problem child. This is a problem household.
Guys, take a listen to Paige Beck, WCJB TV 20.
It's now been 9 days since Delia Young was last seen. The sheriff's office is asking people to speak up if they know something.
We can find her safe and sound. So if the public has seen her, even if you're not sure, we'd rather follow up on every lead than potentially miss something where we could locate her in a timely manner.
And any information on Delia's whereabouts can be reported to the Combined Communications Center at the Sheriff's Office.
Straight back to Dylan Lyons, anchor reporter, WCJB. That's TV 20 News. Dylan, again, thank you for being with us. I believe you were mentioning about how long it took them to report her missing.
That's right. And, you know, not only was it crickets, we didn't hear anything from family. You know, generally, we get calls every day. We get messages to our Facebook page if there's missing family members saying, can you put this out there? There was never that cry for help.
You know, Dylan Lyons, WCJB TV 20, hold your horses. You said that typically you get emails, Facebook, barraged by the family. So I guess Delia's family went on your WCJB begging for help, holding up pictures, holding up her favorite doll. I guess they put up a command post trying to find her, made tearful pleas, went on Facebook, Insta, Twitter. What was their response when Delia goes missing?
It was crickets. I was making all the efforts to communicate with family members, trying to get family members to go on camera, to plea for help, to try to find this missing 13-year-old who seemed to be that perfect child that everyone depicted and, you know, was unfortunately missing, doesn't know where she is, and no family members were willing to go on camera. It was pushed back a day. It was pushed back another day. It was always they had something to do, and they couldn't do it that day.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, we were talking about a missing girl. She's only 4'2", and she weighs 75 pounds. Delia Young in the Gainesville area. I want to circle back to Dylan Lyons joining me from WCJB TV 20. Dylan, you were telling me you kept trying to get the family to come on air and give a public plea, share pictures of Delia, anything to find her, and they kept saying they were too busy?
It was one person, Marion Williams, that I was in communication with. I received her number from the sheriff's office, but she wasn't able to ever do it at a certain time or a certain place. And when I had an interview scheduled with her, there were crickets. No show.
Take a listen to our friend Paige Beck and our new friend Dylan Lyons, WCJB TV 20.
Breaking news right now. Alachua County Sheriff's deputies are exercising a search warrant for the home where missing 13-year-old Delia Young lived.
Right now, Alachua County Sheriff's deputies are searching the home behind me. This is one of multiple properties that Sheriff's deputies obtained a search warrant for just moments ago. Now, tonight, a spokesperson for the Alachua County Sheriff's Office told TV 20 exclusively that they do not have a single person of interest in this case, but deputies are focused on multiple properties, including this one here north of Gainesville, where the 13-year-old lived.
Out to Matthew Mangina, renowned criminal defense attorney in Pennsylvania, former elected district attorney, now defense attorney, and author of The Executioner's Tool. Matthew Mangina, as much as I would like to grab that and run with it, the reality is the first place you should look when a child goes missing is the home. I mean, think about JonBenet Ramsey. The one room that the parents didn't search, and there's the body. You have to look in the home first. If this is a kidnap, there may be fingerprints. There may be some evidence of sorts in the home that could reveal the identity of the kidnapper. If it's a runaway, you'd expect to find some clothes, maybe a backpack, a cell phone missing. You have to look at entry exits. You have to look at the windows. Was a window screen cut from the inside or the outside? Was it broken from the inside or the outside? Just a lot you look at. So the search of the home where the child was before they disappear does not indicate the family's at fault. That's SOP, standard operating procedure.
Right, there's no question. I mean, you have to act with urgency when there's a missing child, because time is of the essence. The quicker that you can begin to figure out what happened, the more likely you are to have this child located, if that's in fact what you have, a runaway or someone who's been abducted. But not only checking the house, I mean, you need to immediately talk to the caregivers, the aunts, the family members, and you need to do that by separating them and make sure that their stories are consistent. And if they're not consistent, and if, you know, things, you know, that put up your antennas, you know, such as, inconsistent statements or unlikely scenarios that a 13-year-old in her pajamas with a pink purse is going to walk out of the house and run off with some boys, that begins to pique your interest, and you want to follow up on those things. You also have to do the background. You know, what do we know about the caregivers? What do we know about the guardian? What do we know about the aunt? What do we know about this child's history? You got to go directly to the school and find out what you can, and find out from her friends what you can. This investigation, especially with a missing person, has to be very expansive and has to be very quick. And I think as you go through that process, you begin to understand, hey, these things aren't adding up. These stories aren't consistent. What we know is not consistent with what they're telling us.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I still have a little problem with what Dylan Lyons just said. Pursuant to search warrant. They searched the home pursuant to search warrant. Why didn't the parents just, it's the aunt. Why didn't she just let them in? Why did they have to go get a search warrant? I don't like that one bit. Cops had to go get a search warrant for her to let them in the home. That's why you get a search warrant, because either you don't get permission or you don't think you're going to get permission. But that wasn't the end of it. Take a listen to our cut five.
We had searched it previously, and in due diligence, we are searching it again, just to make sure that we haven't missed anything.
Lieutenant Beal says they want to search the property again because as they discover new details, they're going to focus on different areas.
anytime you're doing an initial investigation and you don't have a lot of information to go on, you don't always know everything that you might possibly be looking for. And then after you've had time to gather evidence and interview people and get more information, then sometimes you have a better idea of some things that you should be focusing on.
Now, neighbors told me off camera that they saw Young once or twice and that the area is quiet. They say one time they saw multiple children playing in a pool in the front yard of the home.
Okay, I got a problem with that, too. I seem to have a lot of problems with this story and what I'm hearing. The neighbors hardly ever saw Delia Young. Why not? Our neighbors see our children all the time with us, walking the dog, going for bike rides, out and about. They can hear the basketball bouncing up and down outside, hear us playing in the yard on the trampoline. Why don't the neighbors see or hear Delia? Well, what about it, Blotky? Doesn't that ring a red bell of alarm in your mind?
Of course. Everything we've talked about is a huge red flag. And again, time is of the essence. And all these red flags are screaming, and it's just so obvious from the very beginning that this is going to have a bad outcome.
Let me ask you something. Dylan Lyons, WCJB TV 20, at the time, was she, Delia, still virtual schooling?
She was. She was in virtual school this year. Previous year, she was in a school setting.
That's a big problem, because if there was anything wrong with her, the teachers and the principal and the teacher helper, the lunchroom lady, none of them are seeing any signs of problems. One of the first child molestations I took to trial, I pulled up a similar transaction more than 20 years before, where another now grown victim of the same molester came to school with a swollen lip and a black eye. She had been molested. Nothing was done. My point is, teachers see this and are supposed to report it. But then take a listen to Delia's step-grandma. Take a listen.
Where is she? If anybody knows anything, please come out. Please let the authorities know that this young lady is missing. This baby is missing. You know, I don't know what's going on, but God keeps speaking to me, and he keeps telling me she's gone.
Well, I find it very curious that the family had no idea something was very, very wrong. Take a listen to CBS 4 News' Landon Herrer.
According to a sheriff's office arrest report, the call came in on May 16th. 13-year-old Delia Young was reported missing from this house by her aunt, Valerie Young.
Told that the child had possibly run away and that she had been gone since May the 15th.
According to the arrest report, Marion Williams showed up to the sheriff's office Wednesday and told detectives she knew what happened to Delia. They say she pointed the blame at her sister, Valerie.
Disclosed to detectives in her interview that she witnessed Valerie Young beating Delia Young.
Now we finally have a break. A witness comes forward, Valerie Young reportedly beating the little girl. Valerie Young is the victim's aunt, and Marion Williams, the two are sisters. So now they're apparently pointing the finger at each other, but at least it's a break of some sort, Dylan Lyons.
Yeah, and we were told that Marion Williams was the legal guardian of Delia, but the time that Marion Williams went to the sheriff's office to confess or give some point as to which way Delia's body or where her body may be, that's when she was supposed to be talking to me. We have that interview set up at the exact same time she was at the sheriff's office confessing what she knew.
Confessing that she saw the child being beaten, but it goes beyond that. Take a listen to Landon Herrar.
Report says Young used an electrical cord to beat her niece at this house. Marion Williams saw the girl was hurt and offered to take her to the hospital, but the teen refused. Williams left her in her room, and that's the last time detectives say she was seen alive.
Saw her Delia Young on the computer in the floor of her room, messing with the computer. And then, but after they went to bed the next morning, she said she found her deceased.
Deceased? Then where's the body? And why all this drama reporting her missing? Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Straight out to Dr. Kendall Crowns, Deputy Chief Medical Examiner, Travis County, Professor, Texas A&M Medical School, University of Texas adjunct. It goes on and on. Dr. Kendall Crowns, why do perps choose an electrical cord? I see it over and over to beat children. Is it because the plug-in acts like a kind of a cat of nine tail?
Yeah, that's part of it. The plug end is a little more weighted, so you can get more of a damage by hitting someone with it, inflicting a fair bit more pain. It's also a convenient, plugs are usually around the house or extension cords, and you can loop them and whip people that way, or you can use the female or male end plug ends to hit people harder with. And you can also switch up and then strangle them with it as well. So an extension cord is a kind of a multi-tool for the child beaters.
And it's also it's also whatever happened to you as a child, you tend to use the same weapons. Children that were beat with a belt.
Don't care. Don't start with me, Dan Scott, about what happened to the abuser when they were a child. I'm sorry that happened, but that is no excuse.
Oh, I'm not making excuses for them at all, but they tend to use the same weapons that were used on them.
Dr. Kendall Crowns, when you were describing an electrical cord being a preferred weapon of child beaters, it just kind of rolled off your tongue. I mean, I couldn't help but think of one of my children being beaten by somebody with an electrical cord and it wrapping around their legs and cutting their legs or their back. And I mean, Dr. Kendall Crowns, how many child homicides, if you had to estimate, I mean, you've done thousands of autopsies. How many child homicides have you autopsied?
Oh, over the 20 years I've been doing this, probably 2 or 3 a year, so 60, 70, somewhere in there.
How does that affect you to perform a child autopsy versus an adult?
Well, so to me, all cases are tragic, but, kids are especially tragic. It's sad to see a child beaten or killed or stabbed or whatever, what have you, because I always think that there's plenty of people out there that were unable to have children and they would love to adopt that child and raise them and love them and take care of them. So it's, to me, it's a particular tragedy because a child really can't protect themselves. And then in another situation, there would be a parent that would love them. So it's, I always think it's particularly sad when a child dies.
Daphne Young, do you just still to this day die a little on the inside when you hear a story like this? Little Delia getting beaten with an electrical cord, and then she goes and hides in her bedroom and hops on her computer, I guess, to try to put her mind in a different place, if that is even what happened.
Every single time, and the first time I don't, I need to turn in my resignation. I think, we have to compartmentalize to some degree to get the job done. But if you don't feel, and if these stories don't still impact your heart, I've been working with Sarah and Yvonne from Child Help, our founders, they've been doing it for 62 years. They still cry when we talk about a new child or an entry or a child that comes into one of our programs covered in welts like this. Our heart breaks. And right now, during this pandemic, we've been so frightened. Just as you described, isolation is an abuser's best friend. So this child, this sweet little girl, was kept away from the teachers and people that were desperately trying to advocate for her. And she was alone doing remote learning, like so many of these kids that are suffering in the shadows of abuse during the pandemic. And I think when the world opens up again, and the heroes and the teachers and the nurses and folks that usually step up for kids as mandated reporters see. They're going to see the welts or the scars or the bruises or a hair torn out. They're going to see these kids that have been brutalized during this time.
Just to think about the world she lived in and at home with these two hateful aunts that beat her and abused her. And she, this little 4'2", 75-pound little girl, that was where she had to live every day and every night. And then a shock. Take a listen to CBS4.
The report states both sisters then came up with a plan to get rid of the body by hiding it in a pink tote bag and taking it to a separate location.
According to the arrest report, Marion Williams told investigators that her and her sister took the body of Dalia Young down this road to a home Williams owns. She said only her and her sister had keys. They then left the body in a bedroom, still in that pink tote. Williams then told investigators she came back the next day and saw that the pink tote was outside, but Dalia Young's body was nowhere to be found, and she doesn't know where it is.
Marion Williams was arrested yesterday on charges of manslaughter, child neglect, and destroying evidence. Valerie Young was arrested today on similar charges, as well as aggravated child abuse.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you ever noticed, and let me go to you, psychologist Dr. Alan Blotkey, when criminals start telling their stories, they might use one or two pieces of actual truth. And here we see the pink tote bag. Remember at the beginning, there was a report, I guess originating from them, that she had on her PJs and had a pink tote or a pink pocketbook? Yeah, when they tried to dispose of her body.
What a horrible end to the story. I mean, I just wanted to make one other comment. When Marion reported that Delia refused to get medical care, come on. Are you kidding?
Yeah, I agree. Lie after lie after lie.
Right. For every truth, there were five lies.
Now, take a listen to Marion Williams crying.
That was Marion Williams making her first court appearance.
I don't want to hear her crying, carrying on. You know, now she's crying. She wasn't crying when this child was being murdered. The body ultimately was found. Let me go out to you, Dylan Lyons. Where was little Delia found?
It was found off one of the county roads in Alachua County here, not far from the homes that Marion Williams and Valerie Young allegedly lived in. And it was just apparently, what we're hearing, dumped in a tree.
To you, Dr. Kendall Crowns, Deputy Chief Medical Examiner, Travis County, Austin. How will that affect determining cause of death? It was 3 weeks in the elements before Delia was found.
So depending on how much the body is decomposed, it can obscure injuries, hemorrhaging, things of that nature. But what it can obscure is fractures. As long as there's still skeletal remains, you can still find the fractures, the skulls, the ribs, the long bones, et cetera. But as the body decomposes more and more, the internal injuries, like damages to the organs, will be obscured by decomposition. So the further out you get, the less you're going to be able to tell with the tissue injuries, but we'll always be able to determine injuries based on the skeletal system.
What's the very latest on these two demons from hell? Take a listen.
The grand jury determined there was enough evidence to charge the sisters accused of killing 13-year-old Dalia Young. Marion Williams and Valerie Young are now both indicted on charges of first-degree murder, child neglect, giving a false report, and resisting arrest. Dalia was reported missing in May. Her body was found later discarded in a field. Williams, her guardian, was arrested after confessing to police that Dalia was dead and then accusing her sister Valerie of beating the girl. No bond was issued.
Sometimes I feel like there is no justice. And I pray to God I'm wrong. Goodbye, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.